You.
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network to over 70 community stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, hosted by Lisa Dano Daniel. Coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
The following program contains archived content. Some of the information may now be out of date.
Hi, welcome to Word for Word. I'm your host, Lisa Dano Daniel. Today's guest was born in New Delhi and adopted out a month later to Punjabi Indian Thai couple who were living in Bangkok. She went to school in Bangkok but moved to the US to study in the early 2000s. She moved between Bangkok and the US for a time, where she began her careers in filmmaking, theatre and stand-up. In 2019, she toured with her show How Gay Am I? And is currently living in Melbourne with her partner. Welcome to Word for Word, Sananda Seshatrackle.
Thank you for having me, Lisa.
You were born in New Delhi.
Yes.
And you were adopted by your parents.
Yes.
And you lived most of your life in Bangkok. Do you have siblings?
I do. I have an older brother. We were both adopted. So the funny thing is, so my parents grew up as Punjabi in Bangkok. They were born and raised there as well.
Is there much of an expat?
There is a fair number of Indian Thais.
Okay.
I think the official number I last heard probably a decade ago was 200,000. It's grown.
So when you were growing up, you did see other people that looked like you.
Yes.
You weren't highly unusual.
No, I wasn't highly unusual, even though Thai people behaved as though I was highly unusual. I guess like at the top of your street, there's like a clump of motorcycle taxi guys, like 15 guys, and then at the back of your street, depending on how long your street is, there's another clump. So even though these guys worked on the top of my street and saw me almost every day, they would still ask me where I was from and why I spoke Thai so well. And so I would just point down the street and be like, I'm from that building. I just walked over here and I grew up here in that building. I've been on this street for longer than you have, sir. That's where I'm from. But because I've always felt like an outsider in my hometown. So I represent Bangkok as my hometown, like do or die, ride or die, like till the end. It's funny growing up somewhere where you're always seen as an outsider. And the Thai colloquial word for Indian person is kak, which means guest. And then some Thai people joke that it means the guest that's overstayed their welcome, which is not exactly friendly. You know, it's not overtly violent.
It's not really welcoming. It's kind of, it kind of confirms your sense of outsidership.
Yeah.
I just made up a word, but anyway. So you've described yourself as a third culture kid before. Let's talk about that. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So I didn't even realize what third culture kids were or that they existed until I read this book by Ruth something something. I only remember first names. But her book is called Third Culture Kids Growing Up Amongst Worlds. And basically, a third culture kid is anybody who, from the age of 0 to 18, has had to negotiate between two or more cultures daily. So perhaps they live in one cultural environment at home. So for me, a very Punjabi Indian, you know, holding on to whatever they thought is Punjabi Indian from like decades ago.
Yeah, because they hadn't been there for a long time themselves.
Yeah, but very, very, very... I think very normal for immigrant communities to hold on to an antiquated idea of their culture because that is what they know and that's what they left. So they don't, quote unquote, progress with the rest of whatever their home country's views are. Anyway, so I grew up in that was my home culture, was my Punjabi culture. But then outside my house, there was Thai culture that I had to negotiate between every day. But then also my culture at school, which was international, but predominantly American.
So that's where the accent comes from. What language did they speak at home?
They would speak English because they kept Hindi and Punjabi as their quote-unquote secret language.
Oh, so they could kind of talk about you right in front of you.
Yeah. And then now they complain that I don't speak Hindi or Punjabi.
So you speak Thai?
I speak Thai.
And English.
And English fluently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever's necessary.
Do you wish that you had the Indian aspect of your language?
Oh, definitely.
And your brother, what's his cultural, his biological cultural? I think we're making up stuff all over the place here. But where is he from originally?
He was adopted from the same orphanage that I was from in New Delhi. And that's really all we know about our past. I went to visit the orphanage once as when I was in my mid-20s. I went with my parents. My vision was completely blurred by my tears. I couldn't stop crying because it was a very intense. I don't want to say traumatic, but it was a very intense experience. And all I learned there, and I also don't know if they just said this because I, you know, to give me some seed of something of my past. They said my original name was Parvati. I don't know, but I'm glad it's not now, I guess. It's a very traditional Hindu goddess name. Sunanda. Even though Sunanda means good daughter, and that's a lot to live up to, I feel like Parvati's a little bit more intense. But yeah, he was adopted from the same orphanage. He and I look very, very different, though. And I think that's just illustrative of how diverse India is, too. You don't know... you know, you can't say like people from this place. I think that's everywhere. I think we just fool ourselves with these like national identities. And it's like, you look like a.
Yeah, that we look similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
And people have not looked similar. People have been, you know, moving around, migrating for millennia.
So was there any sense in your life that you wanted to find out about your biological parents?
So they don't have any records. And of course, I've always had some curiosity, especially I'm just like, where did I get my features from? Or this like weird quirk about me? Is that biological or is that, you know, something I developed brilliantly on my own?
Because there's those amazing identical twin studies where, you know, twins are adopted out at birth and then one lives in France and the other one's in America and then they get together and they have really similar speech patterns and the way they gesticulate, wow, the way they walk, their taste in music. It's quite fascinating. I find it really interesting.
Wow. I should, yeah.
I'll send you some stuff.
Ah, please, please do. Yeah, but I don't think I won't ever find out.
Yeah. So does that compound your sense of being an outsider?
I'm the youngest of all my cousins on my dad's side. So I was used to being doted on. So it's not like I ever lacked love or attention. Just little things like when they all discuss that they have the same nose. And then I'm like, I don't have that nose. And I'm a foot taller than everybody in my family. And I'm tanner. But all good.
When did you find out you were adopted?
Oh, my gosh. When I was 9. I went to the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok with my parents and my aunt and uncle. My brother skipped going to the embassy that day because he had seventh grade exams, which mean nothing. But he didn't go. He went to school. And so I was with my parents and my uncle and auntie. And at the embassy, I'm standing next to my dad, who's not much of a talker, I guess. He doesn't like talking about emotional or intense things or, you know, kind of sweeps things under the carpet. It makes him uncomfortable. So, of course, I'm standing next to him, and he's passing all our passports over to the immigration agent at the embassy, who then notices that my brother and I hold Indian passports. We both have Indian citizenships because they had to make us passports before we left India, going back to Thailand, or going to Thailand. And my parents and my aunt and uncle all have Thai passports. So, of course, the immigration agent was a little... you know, confused. So he was like, sir, why do your children have different passports than you and your wife? What is, you know, and then my dad tried very hard to whisper, they're adopted. But of course I heard, because I heard everything at 9 years old. I was very in everybody's face, intensely hyper child. And so I overheard. And I was like, what did you say, Dad? Did you say I was adopted? And
he
was
like, did you know what that meant at 9?
Yeah, I was in the top reading group in my class. But yeah, so I knew what adopted meant. And he tried to deny it in his weird fashion, anything that makes him uncomfortable. He's like, no, of course not. No. And of course, I was such a, I don't want to say rebel, but just an annoying little kid. So anything that he would say no to, I would have to say yes to or insist upon. So he's like, no, you're not adopted. And I was like, yeah, I am. I bet I'm adopted. Why would you say I bet I'm adopted? And he's like, no, you're not. And then I ran over to my mom, who was sitting in the waiting area. And I was like, Mom, Dad said I was adopted. And she was like, oh,
my God,
have a seat. And the second she said to have a seat, I was like, oh, God.
So where's your brother at this stage?
He's at school.
Oh, okay. So
he's at school. He's not here to like avert this crisis. Because he had a very different experience. But so I sat down and then my mom's like, so this wasn't, we were waiting to tell you on your 10th birthday, which I was also like, what kind of birthday gift is that? But
yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah. What do you make of that? 10th birthday?
I think they were just like, I don't know.
That you'd be mature enough or something.
Yeah, like I would understand and then I would probably have gifts to distract me or something, or I don't know. A decade of a lie was long enough. Who knows? But, and she's like, we were going to tell you on your 10th birthday, but yes, you are adopted. Yeah, that's how I found out. My brother found out much younger. I think he was only 4 years old and he was playing with an older cousin of mine and they got in an argument or something, you know, like my cousin probably took a toy from my brother or something. And then my brother said, I'm going to go tell my mom. And then my cousin said, go ahead. She's not your real mom anyway. So this poor baby had, you know, his heart broken at 4 years old. And so he had actually asked my parents to never tell me.
Oh, really?
To never tell me or to wait until I was older. And so it was actually crucial that he wasn't there that day. Otherwise, I don't think I would have found out.
Yeah, it's kind of weird planetary alignment, isn't it? That you found out that way in a queue.
Yeah.
In immigration.
Oh, good.
Tell me about school. What sort of student were you? Given you're clearly not a wallflower.
I was, it really mattered to me to do well in school. In fact, in third grade, God, so lame. If I meet a third grader like this now, I'd be like, don't worry about it. You can get your shit together later, way later in life.
Yeah, enjoy your primary school years.
Right. Don't let this be your peak, which is my greatest fear. Third grade was my peak. But third grade, my brother had a hard time in school, so my mom spent a lot of time with him, helping him with his schoolwork. So I think in third grade, that occurred to me, and I was like, I'm going to manipulate the situation. So going from like a perfect, you know, straight A student, I just stopped doing my math homework. And I never handed in my math homework, but then I would get A's on the test. And then at the end of the semester, my teacher was like, what's the problem?
Yeah,
like,
what's changed?
What's going on at home? You haven't handed in any homework, but it's not like you don't know what you're doing. And so I'm going to give you 1 week to do all the homework from this semester, hand it in, and I'll give you a C instead of giving you a D. Yeah, so I did my homework, got the C, and then also learned my lesson and was like, not getting the attention I want is not a reason to jeopardize my future. Also, not realizing as a third grader that your third grade grades have nobody gives a shit about your third grade report card.
So you went to international school.
I did.
Why was that? And like, what is the difference between, say, an international school or just a local school in Bangkok?
All the public schools in Bangkok are in Thai, of course, and that's how you become fluent in English. Because no matter what, if you take English as an elective, you're never going to be as fluent as if you live, breathe, eat.
Yeah, if you're talking it every day at school. Yeah.
And so they decided to send me to this American International School. And at that time, there were only three international schools in Bangkok. And the one I went to was the oldest one. It was started by the U.S. Embassy pre-Vietnam War. So I guess it was the best that, you know, and they wanted to give me the best. But jokes on them. I sound the most American out of all my cousins. I like to say I sound like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
What did you aspire to when you were growing up? Like, say when you were like 13 or something, or in secondary school, was there pressure from your parents to be something like an accountant or something like that?
An accountant. A doctor, of course, which is standard, I think, for a lot of South Asian families.
The fallback.
Exactly. They're like, a doctor or nothing at all. Doctor or bust.
Is your brother a doctor by any chance?
No. he works with my dad selling textiles. Okay. And that was what was expected of him. Yeah, I always thought I wanted to be a doctor. I do love the idea of healing people and helping people. But once I started, I went to college and was pre-med for the first couple years, actually. But when I was in an organic chemistry class and one of my classmates warned me at the library not to leave my lab notebook unattended, I was like, what's the big deal? I'm just going to go pee and like go buy a drink for 10 minutes and I'll come back. And she's like, you haven't heard. It's so competitive. Like, people are stealing people's lab notebooks. And then it kind of clicked in my head and I was like, what kind of bastards are stealing each other's lab notebooks and then becoming doctors? Like, these are not moral people, you know? So I was like, I don't want to be in class.
So that was a tipping point.
That was a tipping point. I think that's just, that was like the little nudge I needed to
change direction.
To change direction, yeah.
A lot of it. So what happened after that then?
Well, after that, I just changed my major to economics because I also enjoy math. We were near graduation time, I realized all my peers in my economics major were getting jobs at banks in New York City. And this was pre the crash. This was, early 2000s. So they were all getting jobs at banks and they were getting signing bonuses. And then in my head, I was like, I can't work at a bank. Banks are fucking gross. Luckily, by then, I had started interning at a tiny little record label that also did concerts.
This is in Bangkok still?
No, this is in New York City. I only interned for them so I could go to the concerts for free. And that was the first time I realized that event production was a job that you could get paid to do. And it was so much like organizing prom, which I was also obsessed with doing growing up. I always did student government and student council.
So you're a pretty organized sort of person by the sound of it.
I like to take ideas and then make them real and bring people together.
Take me through the move from Bangkok to the US.
I had briefly in high school considered Europe or the UK, I guess, or even Australia for college. But I realized I already had an American accent, so it would be easier for me to blend in there. Big mistake, actually.
Really?
I thought I was so American growing up because I went to an American school and then our school celebrated stupid things like Thanksgiving and we would have turkey and cranberry for lunch. And I was like, that makes me American.
So the reality was quite different.
Oh, very. And then I get to the States and I was like, wait, I am a complete cultural alien.
An outsider again.
Outsider again.
What part of the States?
I went to New York City.
Oh, well, that's a big step.
Yeah. But at least that I had that cushion of a lot of diversity.
Yeah.
And it would confuse people when they were like, so where are you from? And if I said I was from Bangkok, then they gave me that puzzled look. And I'm like, but my family's Indian. And they gave me that puzzled look again. And I'm like, but I went to an American school and I'll speak like this. So with people I didn't want to get into it with in college, I just say, I'm from New Jersey. And they're like, we're in New Jersey. I'm like, just across the river. Like, we could see the town that I said I was from. I'd be like, I'm right there between Whole Foods and the movie theater. I live right there. Great. No more questions. Thanks. And that's when I got into, I learned about the third culture kid thing later. And I was like, oh, I'm not Thai, definitely. I'm not Indian, definitely. I'm not American, definitely. I'm just a weird amalgamation of all these things, which has created this characteristic of being able to negotiate between cultures or adapt. Sometimes people will use it. I don't know if it's I guess it's an insult, and they're like, "Oh, you're such a chameleon," or like you're such a, or you like play to a thing. But I don't. But I see that as having been a survival tactic.
Yeah, it implies that you had to develop some sort of resilience because you weren't 100% part of anything. All of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But you were pretty much a part of them. So you've taken, do you think you've taken all the positives and chucked out all the negative?
Oh, no.
Well, pretty hard to do that as a kid.
No, I'm not that optimistic. I think I have a little bit of everything. But I think it's given me more the skill of being able to land somewhere, kind of suss it out pretty quickly, pick out like, oh, these are the things that are different from the last place I was in. And these are the ways I may have to adjust myself in order to be understood and to make friends and to get along.
But a lot of that stuff is not language based. It's just, there's a lot of assumptions. There's a lot of weird, unspoken things in every city, not just every culture, not just every country, but every city, probably every suburb, really. And that's a lot to negotiate when you're an outsider.
Very behavioral. Yeah. And there are those unwritten rules
that even sometimes when someone tries to explain them to you, they still seem mysterious.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about sexuality. You're an out lesbian.
Yes.
You are now.
Yes.
Let's put you, when were you born? Like, give me an age bracket.
I'm 37 and went to college in 2001 to this women's college in New York City where I was class president, but not out yet.
Were you out to yourself? Like, when did, what age did you start to feel that you weren't the heterosexual norm?
At, I've always known, but at 27, I finally said it out loud to myself.
When you say you've always known, is it like a, in hindsight, you know, we think, oh, actually, I remember when I was five, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Is it that kind of thing?
Definitely 100% in hindsight, I have always known. But also in high school, I remember occasionally bringing it up with my good friends, but just saying things like, what if I was... bye. He made me, no, I'm not. Ew, gross. But what if I, no, I'm not. I mean, isn't everybody a little bit, ew, what? Who made out with a girl? Ew, that's gross. What? They had a threesome and I, gross. What? Who was involved though?
Like, so classic testing of the waters really, isn't it?
Yeah. For so long.
To test people's response to, hey, what if this was the case? No, it's not really, but what if it was?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you came out to yourself when you were in your mid to late 20s.
At about 25, I made a really good friend. I was living back in Bangkok. And so when I was back in Bangkok, I met a whole different group of expats. And I guess in your 20s, you party a lot. And so I was meeting a lot of like models and actors because they all speak English and it's a very small community in Bangkok anyway. And they all go to the same bars. So I became friends with somebody who was like a very successful actor in Bangkok, a soap actress. And, you know, she was like the picture of straight, feminine woman. But we got very close, and this was before I was out. So I, again, just thought it was like an extremely close friendship. I was like, wow, what a quick bond we've formed. She is my soulmate friend, very platonic friend. But we would do things like, you know, go away together for the weekend and cuddle a little bit. But, you know, no homo, just cuddling, no homo. And then when I went back to New York City when I was 27 for graduate school, she very abruptly informed me that she had canceled all her work for the next 3 months and she was moving with me to New York City because she couldn't imagine me being there, but not in Bangkok with her. So I was like really, really floored. And I was like, oh my God, somebody's like picking up and moving across the world from me? I'd never had...
As a friend.
Yeah, exactly. I'd never had a relationship before. I'd like, you know, yeah.
You had close friendships.
I had very close friendships.
Like most of us.
With the exact same type of girl. 5'7" or taller.
She has a type.
Eurasian and, model, actor, dancer. It's very superficial.
It sounds like you're dating yourself.
Right? And incredibly, incredibly needy. That is definitely dating myself. Yeah, so she picked up and met me in New York like a couple of weeks after I moved there. And of course, then it like all the super confusion set in. And I was like, this is love. It's true love. You know, I thought. But at the same time, I was still like, but I'm not gay. But it's love. But I'm not gay.
Did you talk to her about it?
No, but at the same time, I watched Portia de Rossi being interviewed by Oprah, and she was talking about her eating disorder mainly, but there was a slight, like, 5 minutes of the interview where Oprah had asked her about her sexuality and how she came out, and Portia said, I'd grown up having very close friends, female friends, and I always pictured us together forever. living together with my best friend and spending the rest of my life and my future with my best friend, but my best friend didn't have the same ideas as I did. And that just like clicked so hard in my head. I was like, holy shit. I think I'm Portia de Rossi. And then but it went unspoken. And then that friend who moved to New York, I think she definitely sensed some weird power dynamic change. And I think she felt like she couldn't just emotionally suck from me anymore in a non-sexual way. And so she left New York very suddenly. I think I went out to dinner one night with a cousin or something and then came home and she was like, I booked my ticket, I'm leaving tomorrow morning. And I was like, what? Why so dramatic? Yeah, and then I went into like this depressive funk and one of my good friends, I still couldn't say it out loud, but one of my friends was like, you know, you're smoking way too much weed. Like, maybe you want to talk to a therapist? And I was like, but I'm not crazy. Because
I'm in love.
Yeah. Well, because mental health is something we don't talk about in my family and my culture at all. So I went to see the therapist, and I think within the first 5 minutes, she was like, do you think maybe you're gay? And I was like, I'm gay. And then spent the rest of the 55 minutes just crying into and like using up her tissue box.
So did you see the therapist for a little while, or was it just something that you was like, yep, I've had my one session and now I'm done and I've decided I'm a lesbian and let's move on.
Yeah. I think I went to 3 sessions because I felt like after those 3 sessions, I felt like I had enough learnings at that point to take away and then work on myself.
Given that you were just saying before that mental health was not something you talked about in your parents' culture and, you know, sort of wider culture. Was it a big deal to go to a therapist?
Oh, yes.
Like, were you in, you know, it sounds like you were in a lot of pain and a lot of confusion. You couldn't speak your truth, basically. It's such a cliche. Was that a big deal to make that booking and then turn up?
Oh, yeah. And then I told my mom, I think, a month later. I didn't tell her I was gay and that I'd come out. I just said that I've been feeling really sad. And so I went to a therapist to talk about it. And my mom just was so alarmed by it. And she's like, why? What is wrong? Are you schizophrenic or something? You know, like it has to just go all the way to the extreme. They can't understand like that maybe, you know, going to a therapist every so often is like great if you feel like you're in a bit of a rut or if you feel like you have this unidentifiable weight or some reason that you're turning to, you know, drugs or drinking or even just like watching way too much Netflix because you're running from something in your life.
It should really be compulsory, I think. I think therapy is such a great thing to do as an adult or even, you know, late teens. I think it's amazing.
Totally.
What's the legal status of homosexuality in Bangkok, in Thailand?
In Thailand, so there is no civil union. There's no legalized gay marriage. But I think, and I don't really know the details about job discrimination and things like that, but generally, culturally, it's pretty tolerant. I wouldn't say accepting, but it's pretty tolerant. And the LGBTQIA plus crew are pretty visible in Thailand. And I think that is really attributable to Buddhism and a Buddhist culture of really like live and let live and being compassionate and being nonviolent.
So there's been a reasonable amount of sort of queer-themed cinema coming out of Thailand over the, you know, sort of 15 years.
Yeah.
Movies. Talk to me about coming out. You've come out to yourself. You've come out to your therapist.
So I've come out to myself.
What happens next?
I've come out to myself, come out to my therapist. And then when I came out to all my friends in New York, they also said, yeah, cool, we know. So glad you know now. And I had flashbacks to when I came out as adopted. Yeah, so I lived the next 3 years very scared of girls. Like to talk to girls. Because like I said, I didn't have a dating life before that.
That's kind of unusual in terms of what I usually hear and hear is that once people have accepted their sexuality, they're just like, oh my God, and out on the scene full time, just freaking out and just loving it.
Yeah.
But you were a little bit more conservative about, hey, I've come out, but now
super
I just
timid.
Need to be careful about this.
Yeah, I think when I came out, I was like, I'm gay, but not gay like they're gay. I'm a different gay. I'm different gay. I'm like gay, but I'm not like gay gay. I'm not like one of those lesbians, which is so stupid. I think it's just, it's fear.
But it's what you can handle at the time. Like, you know, that particular, and I hate using this word, journey for mm-hmm. you was just necessary at that time in your life.
Yeah. And I think because there's so much sexual repression in the Indian Punjabi Indian culture, especially for girls, I think my mom caught a whisper of me catching a ride home in high school with a friend's brother once. And the second I got home, she's like, Adam, who's Adam? Tell me now, who's Adam? What is your boyfriend? And I was like, no. And in my head, I was like, I wish, kind of, except gross, he's a guy. But everybody thinks he's hot. But no, Adam would never, you know. Yeah, growing up, I always was drinking. I was partying. I was doing drugs from a young age because it was just available. But I was never sexually active. And I think in my head, I was like, that makes me a good girl in one way. At least I'm obedient in this way. But I didn't realize that I was also using my repressed sexual preference to bolster that celibacy.
Also you were using substances as a kind of self-medication or to kind of forget or just distract? I mean, I know you know, most people go through that as youngsters, but, you know, sometimes with queer folk that I speak to, there's an added element of kind of medicating or just distracting.
Yeah, I think that happened later with the weed. I don't know that I used it in high school to run away from anything, but because it was very pervasive at my high school.
So you still had coming out to your parents ahead of you. Mm. Talk me through that. How did that happen?
Sure. So
terrifying. I'm terrified for you.
So like I said, I came out to myself at 27, and then from 27 to about 30, I had the lamest dates when I finally could make myself go on a date. When I first got on the apps, I just swiped left on everyone because I was like, grouse, 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 which is so not true. I was grossed out by myself, I guess. I was like waiting for some Victoria's Secret model to like pop up on Tinder, you know, and also right swipe me like a moron. Still had a crush on Barbie, I guess. And so I like gradually I would go to lesbian bars with my male friend, Jürgen, this Norwegian guy, who was one of the only willing friends I had. And of course he was willing. He was like a straight hetero Norwegian dude who is like, we want to go to a lesbian bar. I'm in. Like, he just wanted to glimpse two girls making out. And then all my girlfriends were supportive, but they were like, oh no, it's weird. You should just go. Like, you should just go alone. Like, all of us kind of, you know, so, and I didn't have a lot of lesbian friends at that time. Because homophobia, I guess. Don't know. I didn't know where to find them. And so I gradually, you know, inched into the lesbian bars, didn't meet anyone there, was too scared to talk to girls, downloaded apps, but then like left swiped everybody. And then later, and then my friends were like, you're being an idiot. You're being so superficial. Like, just give somebody a chance. Like, she's cute. She's cute. She's cute. So then I started being like, okay, fine. So like more right swipes. And then I would go on a bunch of first dates. And then these first dates would be 4.5 hours long. And we would just sit and like stare at each other and like over one or two drinks. And then I would just listen. Uh-huh. And then at the end of 4.5 hours, I'd be like, all right, lovely meeting you. And then like not touch, no hug, nothing, just like wave and like goodbye. And then I'd be like, I thought that went well in my head, except, you know, I'm sure they were like, what? I just got free therapy. Like, it's probably what they thought. So lame, 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 lame. And then 3 years later, I think I just got so horny that, and I was in London visiting a friend. And so I think in my head, I was like, I don't live here. I'm only here for like a week. If I do something, quote unquote, dirty, which is sexual, I will never run into this person ever again. So I was at dinner at like 9 p.m. and I just was swiping on Tinder, and I swiped on this girl, and then it like popped up that we matched, and she was like, what are you doing tonight? And I was like, nothing. And she's like, come meet me in Dalston. And I was like, fantastic. So an hour and a half later, I was meeting some random person at a bar. I remember being in the bathroom and sending my location to my best friend in New York.
Occasionally murdered.
Yes. Yeah, that was it was a super weird date. But we got freaky on the dance floor. And then the next morning, I realized that one of my visa stamps was expiring really soon. And I had to get on a plane and go to Bangkok very suddenly. And I was freaking out because I was like, oh, my God. Like, I've finally been touched by a woman and a woman touched me down there. My parents are going to smell it on me. So I was home and I avoided them because I was like, if they see me properly in the light of day, they will know I'm gay.
They'll see the stamp.
Yeah, exactly. Stamp, yeah. Right? We all get a stamp.
There's a lot to the certification process.
Yeah.
But you took the first step.
Yeah, I got in a dirty, deep basement, deep house music. Yeah, so I tried to avoid my parents, but then I went to this queer anti-bullying night with some queer friends in Bangkok and then cried a lot at the badly made short film there. And then they were like, dude, you're being very intense. Like, just tell your parents. Just tell them. And so the next morning I told my dad at the breakfast table. And of course, in his fashion, he just ignored it kind of and was like, okay. And then my mom came out right after I told my dad and she was like, oh my God, what's wrong? What's wrong with your health? Like, she always thinks we're going to die. And so my dad's like, nothing, but she'll tell you in the room. So then I went into my mom's bedroom and then I told her I'm gay. And then her first question was, what about AIDS? And I didn't want to talk about, I didn't want to talk about rates of fluid exchange and, likelihood of HIV. Anyway, that wasn't the topic we were tackling that day. So then when I told her, then she was like, oh, let me discuss it with your father and get back to you. And I was like, what the hell?
We'll see if this is acceptable.
Right.
So why did you tell your dad first and not your mom?
It was just whoever was at breakfast first. And I think I couldn't say anything before that during breakfast. He was just like trying to make small talk. And I was just like, because I was I'm not somebody who can hide how I feel. Like whether I like it or not, I wear my heart on my sleeve. So
that was back in 2014.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's
actually
pretty recent, really. How are they with things now?
Wow, they have done.
Are they down at PFLAG, waving the rainbow flag, or are they still conservative about it?
Still conservative, but they know I live with my, what they call, very good friend.
That's cute.
Yeah, but they know that my partner and I live together in Melbourne and that we met in Bangkok and that we, I don't explicitly say we are sexually active with one another, but they know. And I guess now the challenge is my partner and I talk about and we're like, when we're ready to take the next step, which is, engagement or marriage, how the fuck am I going to break it to my parents that I want to marry a woman and ride in on a horse maybe? And
it kind of makes it real, doesn't it? When it's legal and there's paperwork and a ceremony.
Yeah.
It's a big step.
Yeah, because then it'd be weird for them to say, oh, she married her good friend.
Is it something you would do like a big public wedding and they would fly over or, you would have the wedding in Bangkok or is that the sort of thing?
Yeah, part of me wants that.
Are you proposing to your girlfriend live?
No. We've discussed it. We have a very, practical approach to it. We're neither of us are want the surprise. We're like, no surprises, actually. Like, please do not surprise me. Things are difficult enough, to negotiate with our families, that we should be completely, open with one another and just, discuss and come to an agreement, which I like. But, yeah, my parents have done a 180. But the thing is, when I met my girlfriend 2 years ago, so I came out to them in 2014. They said, take it out of your mind. I told them I wasn't able to. And so but I was living in the States anyway, so I went back and lived my gay life, and then I finally felt like I could, and that's when I started dating women more and being more sexually active. I think also because I had that guilt, I removed that guilt of hiding from my parents. I'm like, they know, and it doesn't matter whether they like it or not. At least they know.
Yeah, it's no longer a secret that you have to keep.
It's not a secret, so I can just go live my life, and they can, you know, make time to deal with this. Like, find the time, however long it's going to take them to deal with it. So I've been dating, whatever, and then in the end of 2017, I was home on vacation. I was just going to be home for a couple weeks. I'd just broken up with somebody who I'd been seeing for a month, and it was, I tried so hard. It was like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, like not anatomically, but, you know, just metaphorically. And so I'd broken up with them, and I remember being on the airplane coming home, and I was just telling myself, like, for the first time in my life, I just want to meet somebody. Like, doesn't have to be a relationship, doesn't have to, but I just want to hook up with somebody who wants to hook up with me, who I really want to hook up with too. Like, I just want to be with somebody that we find, like, very mutually attractive and interesting.
Something simple and easy. Not fraught.
Yeah. Because before that, it had always felt very unbalanced. I was either like head over heels in love with that person, or like this most previous person I'd broken up with after a month was head over heels in love with me, but I was not interested. And so, you know, that does not a relationship make. And so I just asked for balance on the plane ride home. And the second I landed, I got on an app, of course, swiped, matched with my current partner now, who was living in Bangkok and was interning there for just a couple months. And so we went on our first date 2 days later, had like a 7.5 hour long date, and really wanted to hook up, but there were no rooms available because it's high season in Bangkok. So we're like, see you tomorrow then. And then it just didn't end. But at the tail end of my time home, those couple weeks, my parents were like, where have you been every night? You are never home for dinner. You are not. Are you even sleeping here? And I was like, I'm seeing somebody. And they're like, who? What guy? And I was like, girl, I'm seeing a girl. I'm going on dates with a girl, this one girl, over and over. Like, it doesn't mean anything, but it's a girl. Remember, I'm gay. And they were like, gay. We thought. And I was like, we're not going to go through this again. Like, I came out to you guys years ago. You said take it out of your mind. I didn't. So just please trust. It's not going anywhere. And I think that was weird because you never expect having to come out again.
Yeah, it's like twice.
So annoying.
It's like if they assumed it was a phase and if they didn't acknowledge it, it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, that was just annoying. The first time it was really hard. The second time it was just annoying. I was like, just listen when I tell you the first time. But yeah, and then whatever. And then I went back to the States. But my partner and I kept, my now partner, then online person, kept in touch. And then we were like, this can't be a relationship, though, because we live thousands of miles apart. But then she had time off after her internship. So I was like, come meet me. And then we ended up spending a month in Mexico. And then I went back to LA and found out that my visa could not be extended. And that I had to leave Los Angeles within 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Or I'd be on some like weird red flag immigration list. And so I called her and was like, guess who's moving to Bangkok? And she's like, wow, that's amazing. Guess who just got like a contract job for the next 6 months here? For a month, we both lived at our respective brothers' houses. And then we ended up moving in together because we were like, it's impossible to hook up when we both live at our brother's houses. And so I don't know if it was premature or if it's just very lesbianic, but we moved in and then we've been living together since.
So how did you find yourself in Melbourne?
She's from Melbourne. And so she was just in Bangkok on this internship that turned into like a contracted job for several months, which turned into like a year. But then the year was up and she was like, I have to go back to Melbourne. Also, I applied for this job there and I got it and it's a great job.
You hadn't been to Melbourne before or Australia?
No, yeah. I had not. And so I was like, actually, like, let's see, like 5 months, I'll try to get my shit together and follow you after 5 months. So I came to visit for the first time around this time last year. I realized it's it's a fantastic city. And it reminded me of Los Angeles a little bit. The neighborhoods kind of reminded me of L.A. The divide between North and South is like L.A., divided between the West and the East.
It's a little bit Silver Lake-y sometimes.
Yeah,
Fitzroy,
very much.
Brunswick reminds me a little bit of Silver Lake.
Oh, hardcore.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're familiar with Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I live there, but I've been there a lot.
Okay. So I live in Brunswick East now.
Silver Lake.
Yeah, and I used to live in Los Feliz in Los Angeles. So I was like, I'm basically moving to the same neighborhood, but the Australian version.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that much of an adjustment, I would say. And also, there's so much more comedy here than in Bangkok. And I didn't want to stay in Bangkok anyway. I just had to be there because it's the only place I could have legally been at that point. And so, yeah, I came in June, and it's been good.
So can you stay?
Yes.
Definitely. Yeah.
We've applied for a PR through a partner visa.
Tell me about the cultural differences you've noticed so far living in Melbourne.
For some reason, I thought because Australians watch American television, it would be much more similar to American culture.
It's pretty similar.
Yeah, but I would say it veers more British.
Okay, that's interesting from an outsider's point of view.
Yeah, I will always be an outsider. Yeah, especially this. I see a lot of comics make the joke because I guess it's very true. The underwhelmingness Australians like to exhibit or don't exhibit. I guess
we're pretty chill, reserved,
very very reserved. Yeah, people are much more expressive in the States. But
yeah, the volume is so much higher in the States.
Oh, very much. So I noticed that it's super quiet here, which is like London to me. Because I remember the first time I went to London and I sat in a park and I looked around and I was like, this park is full, but it sounds empty. Like, I feel like I'm in a movie and all these other people are just extras who are pretending to talk. So my dialogue can be recorded. This is weird. Yeah, so I see that similarity between Australia and the UK, the quietness level and the being more measured.
We don't freak out very much.
No, it's super. Yeah. So I'm used to the bigness of the States.
Yeah, which we're not here, really.
I guess. Yeah. So I've been trying to tone it down a little bit.
Let's talk about your career because we're nearly end and we haven't even touched on that yet.
Oh, yeah.
Are you able to work full-time? Like, is this a full-time thing for you or do you have to have weird part-time jobs in retail and hospitality?
Still need the weird part-time jobs, but I don't have experience in retail, actually. I do production as my day job, which I guess makes it a little confusing because people are like, what? Why are you here for this role when I just worked with you, as a line producer a couple months ago? And I'm like, because people can do more than one thing. And you have to, I think, as an artist.
Yeah. I mean, you've worked in a lot of stuff. Like you've done improv, you've worked in theater, you've worked in TV, you've worked in writing, you've done some filmmaking, stand-up.
Yeah.
Which of those is your first love? Do you have a first love or do you just like all of them?
I would say I love performing and I love live performance so much, but I also love recorded performances like TV or film acting, especially when there's improv involved and you're working with other people who are really great improvisers, because you really can just have like 57 different outtakes that all work.
Because you're pretty busy in the States. Like you were doing stuff with Broad City and, working with some pretty amazing people up in New York City.
Yeah.
In terms of your stand-up, how did that come about in terms of writing a show? Like, so your main show and is How Gay Am I?
Well, I just started doing it at the Fringe Festival here.
Here in Melbourne.
And then I did it again at Midsummer. And that's because prior to Melbourne in L.A., I was always working with somebody else.
This is your own thing.
Yeah, I had to create a solo project because I didn't know anyone else here. And but in L.A., I was doing the show called Indian Wedding, which I'm going to try to bring here. But that's also a live stage show. And it's basically a showcase for South Asian artists that I host as a character. But in L.A., I had a co-host and a co-producer, very talented, Amrita Dhaliwal. And then I was doing a lot of sketch in L.A. So it was a lot of ensemble work. But yeah, here I've had to do solo stuff because I don't know anybody. But it's great. And I'm hoping to take How Gay Am I to India, actually, I'm currently looking for grants and some kind of funding because I think that I don't want to sound self-important, but I think if I were able to have seen a South Asian woman on stage doing a show called How Gay Am I? And exploring the queerness of her life and how she came out and sharing her coming out stories and all the different alternatives had this one thing not happened, I think it would have saved me a lot of grief.
It kind of speaks to that cliche of, you know, you can't be what you can't see. So, you know, maybe if you'd seen a version of Sananda somewhere earlier, things might be a little bit different. But, you know, your journey was your journey.
Yeah.
Tell me about the show.
So the show How Gay Am I? I start with my coming out to my parents' story, actually.
Which time?
Yeah, the first time. And then I do a bunch of different characters, and they're basically imaginings of if one thing had gone differently. So the first character I do is
like
good
a sliding doors type thing?
Kind of, but okay. I'm definitely not Gwyneth Paltrow. But she is in the show. She is in the show. That's okay. All I'll say. Yeah. Yeah. So I do this good Indian girl at the matchmakers, and that's who I imagined I would have been if I had taken it out of my mind, you know, and just obeyed my parents. And then I have another character called Beef Police, and that's who I imagine I would be if I wasn't adopted and I was raised on the streets, you know, kicked out of the orphanage and then raised on the streets of New Delhi. And would have been drawn to like Hindu nationalist groups and the Hindu nationalist movement, and would have deeply repressed my sexuality, but told people that they weren't allowed to eat beef and could only be strictly vegetarians. Yeah, and then I also do a gay conversion bit, where at the end of the show I basically call everyone gay. I call everyone out on being gay, because that's something I had to, you know, if you live through the 90s. Or even, I guess, the 2000s, you're used to hearing gay as an insult, like equivalent to lame or stupid, like, oh, it's so gay. So I decided to just turn that on its head, and I finally have the power, especially that I've come out as gay and I can own that word gay. Now I'm allowed to call every single person in the audience gay if I want to. So that brings me a lot of joy.
What sort of comedy writer are you? Do you carry around a little notebook and take notes, and or do you just sit down and discipline yourself to actually bang out something?
No. Sometimes I'll just – this is why I need more friends here, because I'm very verbal, and so I like forming my stories by telling them to people, and like that's how I would form my bits, really, is to tell the same thing to several different people, and – I'm noticing how they're reacting to it, and then it builds it every time. And then I saw that Maria Bamford.
I love her.
She's fantastic.
She has pugs. I have pugs.
But yeah, like Maria Bamford, I think in one of her comedy specials shows that. And through the special, she's doing her set, but you see her first do it in the mirror and then maybe to her pugs and I think to her partner and then to like a group of three friends. And then it grows from like three friends to like seven friends to like 15 friends. And then she's doing it in the park to a group of people. And then all of a sudden she's on stage doing it to a whole audience. And nothing helps me write better than that is just live reactions, you know?
Yeah. So in terms of how gay am I, mm-hmm. how would you feel about your parents seeing that? Are you ready for that sort of thing?
I don't know if they're ready for it. I would love for them to see it, but I also don't want to give them a heart attack. Yeah.
Not taking it to Bangkok anytime soon.
No. I mean, a very, very early version of that show was what I used to come out to my extended family in Bangkok.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I did like a 20-minute version where I told a short version of the story and I did the Indian girl character. And I just invited all my extended family, like my cousins, and I'd be like, just come to this bar at this time. I'm doing a comedy show. And then they came, and then I was like, I'm gay. And then that way I didn't have to tell them all individually.
It's probably the first time I've heard that as a coming out story to extended family.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? What's on the horizon in terms of work, of career, of comedy, improv, TV? Yeah. What are you doing next?
So this year I really want to focus on How Gay Am I. I'm going to be taking it to the Hollywood Fringe because I just want all my friends in LA to see it and I know some people that I would love to see it there. And then also hopefully get it to India. And then I would love to write and develop a show a TV show here, but still meeting people to work with because it's always best to collaborate.
And we're a little slow on diversity here, so someone like you kind of shaking up things is, you know, fantastic to hear.
Oh, thank you.
Sananda, it's been great to speak to you.
Thanks, Lisa.
I'm really excited about seeing your show at some stage and really excited about what you're going to do next. And congratulations on being in Melbourne.
Thank you.
You know, negotiating the tram system and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, checking out all those cultural differences. And I hope to see some of that in your shows at some stage.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Cheers.
Word is presented and produced by Lisa Daniel, with production support by Chris Tate from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 stations across the community radio network.
I never realized it's like